Rat.
Rose.
No.
Hello, Star Trek fans, and welcome back to Warp Trails. This is the RetroZap Podcast Network show devoted to Star Trek. I'm your host, Dennis Keithley, and with me, as always, is my wife, co-host, and most favorite Star Trek fan, Beth.
Welcome back, everybody.
So we'll be discussing Mirrors, which is the fifth episode of Season 5 of Discovery. So you just added it's halfway through the final season. Is that true? I thought it was 15 episodes.
I think we're halfway through the final season. How long is Discovery season 5? A 10-episode fifth season was officially ordered.
Okay, so we're halfway through. All right, well, this will be a full spoiler discussion of this episode, which features the quest for the next clue in the location of the progenitor technology. And it takes them into interdimensional space, and we find out some stuff about Maul and Locke and their past in the process. What did you think about this episode, Beth?
I think I have enjoyed season 5. And while this is not the worst episode of Discovery I have ever seen, this is the worst episode of season 5 that I have seen.
Wow. Really? Okay. Because well, this might be my favorite.
Okay, I'm going to say it, and maybe this is just the Star Trek fan in me. Mm-hmm. If you are going to give me the ISS Enterprise, and you are going to give me hints that Saru and Spock teamed up to bring a whole group of refugees out of the Mirror Universe and into the Federation, and then you're going to give me a Romeo and Juliet star-crossed lover story with Maul and Locke, no, thank you. I was like, what? No, please stay Enterprise. And frankly, I still, there was so much potential there for Locke to be so interesting, but do you know how he's different than other Breen?
Okay, well, there's lots of things to discuss there as well, and sure. We'll get to it over the course of this. Yeah, I just flat don't feel the same way. I enjoyed this episode. I liked the backstory between Maul and Locke. It made them sympathetic for me. There's lots of things I don't understand about the Breen. This confused me as much as it gave me answers, but I'm hoping to find out more and figure some things out as we go. I appreciate what you're saying about the Enterprise. Yes, if you're going to have the Enterprise, you definitely want to have it be a bigger feature of the episode and what happened with it, as opposed to just a plot point, I suppose, to propel this plot along. It deserves its own story there. But I'm a sucker for getting any bits of that story, and I'll take it this way. And so, let's dive into it here. So we're picking up from where we left off in the last episode, and Stamets and Tilly figure out by doing some appropriate scans with Zora's help, you can find this wormhole that takes them into interdimensional space. Yep. And that's where Maul and Locke have gone. And so when they get in there, they find that Maul and Locke's ship's been torn in half. And lo and behold, there is the ISS Enterprise. So the Terran version of the Enterprise. And so they go aboard. They start searching. They scan for quantum signatures for their own universe. And they find that there's 3 of those in sickbay. So it must be Maul and Locke and the clue. And then along the way, as you were suggesting, they find out these hints. The backstory of how Enterprise ended up here. So I guess it probably makes sense just to, well, first off, let's kind of talk about Rayner and Michael here before they go off on this. Rayner calls Michael into the office and suggests that she shouldn't be the one going on the mission, that given the stakes and the danger, that it should be him. What'd you think about this discussion?
I mean, that is very much what the first officer is supposed to do. I actually liked this conversation quite a bit. I thought this was a really good Rayner episode. I think we both said at the end of last episode, we hope this sticks, like the lesson of the last episode sticks around. And I think this episode proves that it does in a way that still feels very true to Rainer. Like he had that, what did he say? Something like, I get it, it's not so simple, more words. Mm-hmm. But like he was still, like he didn't have a complete personality change. He's still very much him. And he got the job done. Like I was like, okay, you might not be, I could see how he was a good captain.
Yeah, I'm with you on this one. I was afraid that they were going to turn this whole Michael and Rainer discussion in her ready room into a him being stuck in his old ways and being wrong. But no, you're right. That's exactly what he's supposed to do. The captain's not supposed to be the one going on the away missions. They're supposed to be, they're in charge of the ship. And you know, she's in charge though. And she tells him, nope, this is the way we're going to do it. And he accepts that. And so it wasn't him trying to pull the experience card on her or talk over her, talk down to her. That being said, you know, the other point you made there about, you know, his character arc that we're experiencing this season, I like it. He didn't necessarily backslide, I should say, but while he's learned the lessons, they're hard lessons to take for him. And so when he barges into engineering and is talking to Stamets and Adira, you know, he's saying things like, you know, give me ideas in one sentence to, you know, you're pointing out, okay, that's worth more and stuff like that. But, and then it's not till Stamets says, well, allow me to quote what you told me recently, which is like, you're not in this alone. And which reminds him that, okay, this is a different crew, a different way of doing things. So yeah, I like this character. I like his story arc that we're experiencing this season. And if this is indeed only 10 episodes, that is a very good choice, because I feel like the previous seasons, by the time they get to episode 15, they've stretched out all the story arcs, all the character beats, and way beyond that needs to be done. And I'm thankful they're not doing that this season so far.
For sure. For sure.
Okay. So when they finally get over to the Enterprise and they start looking heading towards sick bay, they find this side room that is really kind of a camp. And they find that people have been staying there. And we get other clues along the way that Saru did help kind of organize this rebellion and got these people out of the Terran Empire and stuff like that. I know you were not happy that this was relegated to backstory for this episode, but what did you think of that story in general?
I loved that story in general. I have every reason. I mean, I know I am taking giant leaps and bounds, but in my head, I am absolutely convinced that Spock and Saru work together to make that happen. Now, I do not think for a second, for some reason, because I'd just be too weird, I don't think either Spock or Saru maybe made it the full way into that dimensional space. Mm-hmm. But I do think the actions from the original series Mirror Mirror is one of the things that created this to happen. So between Discovery's Mirror Universe episodes with Saru and the original series episodes with Spock, in my head, they have teamed up. And maybe that's the problem, right? I have given this just this huge amount of headcanon that I am disappointed that I didn't get.
Fair enough. I did like the conversation that Booker and Michael had when they're on the bridge and she kind of looks over at him and he misunderstands the look on her face. And she says, no, that was my brother's station back on the Enterprise. And I can't remember what Booker says about, you know, maybe him having been different. And her response was, no, I'm sure he was just as ruthless as the rest of them. When in fact, we know from the original series that he wasn't. He did
exactly
kind of conform to some of the Terran Empire tactics, but you know, the our universe's Captain Kirk managed to get through to him. And we found out through Deep Space Nine, wasn't it, that he kind of reformed the Terrans, which ended up them getting subjugated by that coalition of Cardassians, Bajorans, and Klingons later.
Right.
Yeah.
But yeah, I would have liked Michael to know what, I don't know why it matters to me, but I was like, oh, it's too bad Michael's not going to know what Spock was like in the Mirror Universe.
Well, I'm sure David Mack or Jonathan Jackson Miller or someone's going to write a novel that tells us all about that. Now that that idea has been planted. So be on the lookout for that. Okay, so they get to sickbay, and Maul and Locke have set up holo duplicates of themselves so that to give themselves an advantage when Michael and Booker head in there, and they disable the holo emitter, and then there's a bit of a face off. But this is where we start to get the backstory of what was going on with Maul and Locke all along. She was a courier. He is the nephew of the Primarch in this area. I get the feeling that there are several factions of Breen. They're all competing to be in charge, not unlike the Klingon Empire. And she works out a deal with him because he's kind of disgraced to be the inside person for her diluted dilithium. And then it turns into something of a romantic relationship. So what did you think about the backstory?
This made no sense to me. And this is the thing. Like, if you're gonna give me the backstory, which I am curious about, but I'm still curious about, I still don't know what any of Locke's motivations were. Like, she says, do you want to get payback? I'm not entirely sure how giving Maul money and bringing bad dilithium into the Breen Empire really sticks it to, it doesn't seem like this, it's really sticking it to his uncle. And I still don't know what made Locke so different that he was regulated to shuttle bay duty in the first place, which again, to me, is a more interesting story.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I think about that. Like, there's nothing wrong with his backstory. I believe that Maul and Locke are a couple. I believe that, you know, I do believe the star-crossed lovers thing. I believe that the blood bounty is real. Like, I'm not questioning their relationship. I'm just like, if you're going to give me an episode that is supposed to set them up, and maybe this wasn't the episode that's supposed to set them up as empathetic characters, but I'm like, I don't know that other than Locke is Breen, I really know a whole lot that I didn't know before this episode about them.
Okay. I mean, I feel like I learned something, you know, how they met. She was a courier, and for whatever reason, he was in a position that was not in line with his rank, because she was able to read, I guess, the insignia on his belt, I think is what it was, and determine that he was royalty of some sort. And, you know, she parlayed that into trying to work out some sort of relationship so that he could make money, he could make some money, he could get some sort of revenge. I think it has to do with peddling this diluted dilithium onto his uncle and his uncle's forces. And then over time, it grew into something more. And, you know, I like the way that they kept coming back. We had those time jumps in there. And then the one thing I didn't get, and I'm hoping there's more explanation by the end of the season, is the whole two faces of the Breen thing. Because she says to him at one point after they've been starting to get close, it's like, you promised to show me your face. And he's like, oh, we're busy. I'll show you next week. And she responds like, that's what you said last week. And so he relents and finally lifts or deactivates the helmet. And we see this glowing green face. I'm not sure exactly how to describe the difference between it and what we've seen so far in this episode. And then later has the face that we're accustomed to. And there is this reference to Breen wearing two faces. And the fact that, I mean, they look this pretty much the same to me, except for one's glowing and one's not. So I don't understand what the big difference between the two of them is. You have any insight on that? Because I couldn't pick it up.
No, I think one of them is probably, I think the glowing face probably hides their actual face a little more. And that's probably the one that they show to outsiders. And that what we see as Locke is his actual face and is a little more personal. But I'm, again, just making that up.
Yeah. And then it gets further complicated because, like, removing their helmet is this big deal on top of that.
It did have a Mandalorian vibe to it.
Yeah. So, but then, event, you know, it finally comes to a head when they kind of get caught in the act. You know, when they get real close and they've set up some sort of a stealth field so they can have a private moment And the uncle comes charging in and confronts them. And basically, this is preceded by her saying that she's going to take these contracts inside the Emerald Chain. So with the Orions, mm-hmm. it's more dangerous, but it pays better. When he offers to increase the value of the contract, she's like, it won't be enough, because she's trying to get back to this colony in the Gamma Quadrant, which we can discuss here in just a second. But, and then they ultimately get caught in the act by the Primarch. So Locke's uncle, and this is when, you know, Locke is confronted with this whole mission. You're like, how dare you wear this face? You know, it distracts you. You're consorting with lesser beings. And then his opportunity to redemption is to shoot her. And instead he shoots the other brain, and then shoots his, I take it, it was supposed to be a non-lethal shot in the shoulder to his uncle. And then he's got this Eriga, which is this blood bounty on him, which is explains why, you know, we've heard references to this bounty in previous episodes, why they're so desperate to get this progenitor tech, because it's the only thing that they believe is going to get this bounty lifted. And according to the last episode, that was likely the case. So,
although I agree with Michael that they probably will just take it from him and then kill him, but
yeah, that's a distinct possibility as well. But in the end, Maul and Locke end off going off together. So, you know, tragic relationship, such as it is. So we've got Booker desperately trying to form some sort of a connection with Maul, and really, really pleads with her. Plead may not be the right word, about her father, who she can't stand, what he meant to Booker, and how, as far as he's concerned, that's the last bit of family that they, you know, he's got left after Quajon's been destroyed. I can tell by the expression on your face you didn't appreciate that, but go ahead and share your thoughts.
Well, I mean, that bit at the end where it was like, look, I know he was bad for you, but he was good to me, and therefore I feel a responsibility to you through him. That part I liked, but that was at the end. At the beginning, the idea, and you and I have never, we have wonderful fathers. We have never dealt with any sort of abandonment from that point of view. So I don't, but the idea that the father that abandoned you when you were really young, yeah, he's a good friend of mine and he loved you. Like, how is that going to be a connection? I mean, I thought Maul's response was spot on. Like, not only do I not care, but kind of annoyed that this man who abandoned me clearly can have close relationships with other people. So fabulous. Not only are you proving that, you know, I mean, that probably fed into about 3,652 of her issues.
That's a lot of issues.
But I just had no idea. Like, they both, and Book and Michael are a great team. And one of the things I actually really did like about this episode was that even though they're not together as a couple, they still really work together as a team. And I really enjoyed their back and forth as a team. That was by far my favorite part of the episode. Every time those two were working with each other. But the idea that both of them thought that somehow a deadbeat dad was going to be the key to connecting with Maul, I still don't understand. I feel like Holber at least should have been like, really?
I see what you're saying, and I agree with you. I think Booker was trying to use it as a form of introduction in this. Mm-hmm. And yes, it was not going, I think it was foolish if he did in fact think that he was going to bring up the connection and she was going to throw down her gun and say, hey, you know, my father's friend, my savior. It was foolish. But I think he was taken back by exactly how much venom there was that Maul had for Cleveland Booker III, or whichever one he was, you know, Book's predecessor there. And I think he probably should have led with what he ended with, you know, that part that you highlighted there, which was the, he gave me a new life. And although he may have been lousy for you, he was great for me. And so I need to repay that by trying to do something for you. That was the place to start. But
yes.
But again, I think when it came down to it, he was desperately trying to impress upon her that your dad wasn't as bad as you think. Look what it did for me. And he was just too blind by his own experience to see mm-hmm. that.
Mm-hmm. No, for sure. But I just wish, I don't know. I was like, how is no one pointing this out to him? I am not very good at this sort of stuff, but even I can tell you this is not going to work, book. Come on.
Yeah, but I don't feel like he exactly shared all of his plans with everybody either in advance.
That's probably true.
Yeah, I mean, yes, if he'd ran this by Culber, I'm pretty sure it would have been like, are you serious? But you know, Michael brought him along because she believed that he could be useful in this situation based on experience. I don't think she was counting on that, though. So, and frankly, the whole, I've never gotten this in any show, and it comes up all the time. It's like, surrender, we'll make sure you get a fair trial, which was the appeal that they kept making to Maul and Locke, which is that you don't have another way off here. Put down your weapons, come with us, we'll get you to Discovery, and then you'll get a fair trial. Well, one, kudos for not lying to them about what's going to happen. But two, it's the, when has that worked? Oh, I'm going to get a fair trial? That's all I ever wanted in this life. No, it's they don't want to be held accountable at all.
Well, and then what did you think of Maul's deal? Which was basically, you take us, but you get us out of here, you take us back to Discovery, and we'll let you replicate this.
I thought it was a smart move on her mm-hmm. part, because, if you look at it through the lens of a negotiation, and Burnham's first offer was, you put down your weapons, give the clue to us, we'll take you to Discovery, and we'll see you get a fair trial. Okay, you don't offer exactly, you have to talk them into it. And by giving them a terrible offer to begin with, then you can give them something that's more realistic in the middle. Although that may have actually been the only offer that Michael can make them. But on the flip side, which is Maul's initial offer was, leave us the hell alone and we're going to mm-hmm. go our own way. You go, why can't you leave us alone? And then so she did make a move on that once she realized how desperate their situation was. And so I it was worth the shot, but they were dealing from such a position of weakness. They really didn't have any way to expect that Michael or Booker or any of them were going to take them up on that offer.
Right, for sure.
Yeah. So in the middle of all this, we kind of got this back and forth. We got to see a little bit in the previously on Discovery segment from what happened in the time loop in the previous episode. And then it kind of comes up again here, but it is Michael and Booker's relationship. It was one of the surprises that she experienced. And, as they are careening towards the aperture in the Enterprise, when this is all done, she says, I have to tell you something just in case we don't make it. You were one of the surprises. It was nice. And they were happy. And then at the end of the episode, he kind of comments on that as well, that, that was a good time, that they were happy and stuff like that. What'd you make of all that?
I mean, I think at some point I'm assuming by the end of the season, Michael and Book will be reconciled, and I will be happy when that happens. But I am glad that, and one of like I said, not the worst episode of Discovery I've ever seen. One of the things I did like about this episode was that it wasn't the two of them being super awkward with each other the whole time. I mean, even when she's like, look, if we don't make it, I need to tell you something. And Book's response was more like, don't talk like that. We're going to make it, as mm-hmm. opposed to, I don't want to hear what you want to say right now. So,
yeah. I like this as a way of picking up the conversation, because they've been mm-hmm. talking about the awkwardness that's been between the two of them all this. And then she got the reminder of how good it was in the past. And she didn't say, I have to tell you something, I'm still in love with you. That would have been over the top, which yes. was the, hey, I had an opportunity to remember what it was like before, and it was nice, and we were happy. And that's huge. I mean, I've never been in a relationship that's been rekindled,
Right.
I've been married for a long time. We never had that type of thing that's happened here, but just it was a mature, anti-teen angst type of a move, which is, not pouring out your emotions and your love for someone in the desperate hope that they'll take you back. It was the, if this never happened, everything ever happens again, we've experienced this awkward. I can acknowledge there was this time that we had that was nice and we were happy. And that was a very nice adult thing to see.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
Okay. So I don't know if we got a ton left to discuss, but let's go ahead and get to the escape from the aperture. So, you know, Locke got injured in the standoff with Michael. Hey, I guess we should bring up the whole point that Booker and Maul had to work together to try and get Michael and Locke out of sickbay because those shields went up due to a containment failure or whatever it was, and they were stuck in there. And then when Maul lost her patience, especially because Booker kept bringing up the whole relationship with her father thing, she created that overload with the power to bring down the shields, which then sent the Enterprise careening towards the aperture. And that's when Locke and Michael started swinging at each other again, and the knife he picked up, he ended up stabbing himself in the chest with. But then Michael and Booker have to take control of the Enterprise, and they send out a tractor beam through the aperture so that Discovery knows something's coming. And then they pulse it to that 3414, which is from the Ballad of Krull. Mm-hmm. They unloaded us a lot of stuff on Kellerans, which we find out is what Raynar is.
Yes.
In this episode. And he figures that out, that, hey, they need to make the aperture bigger and hold it open for longer. And then, to your point earlier, this is where he gets to show his growth by working with the team to encourage ideas, which they come up with. Reese comes up with the idea of the anti-manter torpedoes that will, and then Stamets chimes in, yeah, that'll power the anti-manter reaction that's happened here. They'll make it open for longer, but then once it's done. That's their one shot. And it all works out. So what was your take on that?
Well, first of all, I think Reese was denied the cask that was his, although it was very nice that Raynor shared it with everybody. I was like, I actually think Reese nailed that, but okay. I think the visuals of the Enterprise, this is fan service, and as I have said many, many times, I'm a fan and I like to be serviced. But all of the shots of the Enterprise coming out of the aperture where it's like bright white and then it's, you know, our girl coming through, mm-hmm. was super cool. And I loved that quite a bit.
Yeah, I think this was my favorite part of the episode. Watching everything come together, that, you know, Michael and Booker on the one end steering the Enterprise out, and then on the other, Raynor rallying the team. I do think that at least Tilly and Stamets deserve part of the cast because they're the ones that came up with the hexagonal formation that they were going to need to fire the torpedoes in. And then when Raynor said, why does it have to be hexagonal? And Stamets is like, don't worry about it. The important thing is it'll work. And so,
but that's such a, like, it cracked me up because that is such, I know he's Kelleran, but that is such a like thing that people do. Like, I don't care when I don't care. And then suddenly I do care.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so he, like, Raynor comes down to engineering earlier and he's like, ugh, don't tell me how the cake is boiled. But then,
spoiler cake.
Yeah.
Don't know.
Which I actually looked. You can find on Google boiled cake recipes, but they all end up in the oven eventually. So I still don't know how you boil a cake, but anyway, that's not important right now. But then it's like, oh yeah, you know, Adiric says it has to be hexagonal. And to your point, Rainer's like, why hexagonal? Which is such a, like, you know, cause it's that little weird point. Mm-hmm. It's like cake boiling, sir. You don't care. But it was really, but him on the whole time Raynor was on the bridge, and I actually did notice before Michael called it out that he never sat in the chair. I had mm-hmm. actually noticed that he never did. He touched it, but he never sat in it, which I thought was kind of interesting. But he was very good. You know, he knew everybody's name and he was just sort of bopping along and they were very responsive to him. Like, I was like, okay, they've clicked. It's very good.
Yeah. Yeah, indeed. I like the team effort there. Okay. But this is killing me. Why, again, were Owo and Detmer not on the bridge? They get talked about in this. They get to take the ISS Enterprise back to Starfleet storage or whatever they're going to do with it. Although I kind of want to see the detached nacelles and have that added to the fleet in some capacity. But neither here nor there. But those two are the most experienced, you know, tactical and helms officers on the ship. This is an extremely important mission. Where were they? What were they doing?
And are they coming back?
Yeah.
I thought of you when they were that was the bit about, you know, Detmer and Owo taking the Enterprise back to Starfleet. I was like, so was last episode their last episode? Because how long does it now? I know we're in the, you know, in the far future, and they could probably transport themselves from Starfleet back to the Discovery without batting an eyelash. But I was like, well, how long is it going to take? I don't know what kind. I mean, that ship is not in good shape. It was not in good shape before the power surge, and it's certainly not in good shape now after the power surge. So I'm pretty sure those guys are not going at warp. So how long is it going to take to get the Enterprise to Starfleet?
And some port of the injector coil had been ejected during that as well. So they had to make some sort of repairs just to get it underway on the way back to Starfleet. But, you know, when this happened previously, you brought up the point is because so that we couldn't see their reaction after Raynor was being an ass on the bridge. That's not the case this time.
No, and I don't know what it, I mean, it must be scheduling now, but.
But I was just like, this is, you know, they're rather important people on the bridge, and for them not have them for this seems very strange. So I can't help but wonder if they were only going to have limited availability, and maybe they do show up for the last five episodes and this will be a moot point, but then promote them and put them on other ships as opposed to doing this would have been the better. That's my objection to this is I don't understand why they keep getting removed. You can make a story reason out of it before, but not this time. So
no, I agree with you. I thought it was really weird.
Okay.
I thought it was really weird.
So Culber is having something of an existential crisis here until he notices it. What'd you make of that?
I certainly think that Culber has every right to be having an existential crisis. Like, and they did mention, and actually, you know, because they said with the in the Janal episode that it was kind of a lot. And Culber kind of seemed to brush it off in a way that I was like, well, so I don't mind that he's having an existential crisis. Like I said, I think he deserves it. I'm not entirely sure, other than Culber saying I'm fine three times, which is usually a bad sign, frankly, how Tilly noticed that he was distracted. I don't know that I did until Tilly pointed it out.
I think it's simply because Culber wasn't his usual, hey, how are you? Good to see you. What can I do for you? Type of self when she showed up in sickbay. And, you know, she was bubbling on about the, you know, I met this very nice ensign, but she had a Cardassian vole or whatever it was in her. And so, you know, it was new to the ship. And then he's just kind of like, I'll go to my room, you know, take your time, whatever like that, which is a little out of character for him.
A little bit.
Yeah. And frankly, I don't know that there was a good way that they could have wrote with, and that may have just been the best thing they could come up with.
That's true. But I liked her and Culber's conversation at the end. That, you know, you've got it in the notes that Tilly says, you know, the intellectual and the spiritual are not that far apart. And Culber's like, well, I didn't say spiritual. And Tilly's like, you kind of did. And he kind of did. I was kind of, I was extra paying attention on the second watch through. And he does not say, technically he's correct. He does not say the word spiritual, but Tilly is absolutely correct. He kind of did.
Yeah. But I liked what she had to say about that, which is that they're not all that different. They both are looking for answers to the unknown and why we're here and what happens and things like that. And so that was a good point. I like that one.
Yeah, for sure. I also liked that what Culber says to Tilly is, this is something that Paul doesn't like, and I don't know how to talk to Paul about it in a way that I can, that we can have a conversation with him, which is like one of those, like, I thought it was really healthy. This wasn't like Hugh and Paul are having a fight. This is, here is something that I, you know, my spouse cannot be everything for me. I need someone else to help me with this. And therefore, since you offered Tilly, I'm reaching out to you. Like, I was like, okay, good. We're not going to turn this into a thing. This is going to be a just, this is a conversation I have with Tilly.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was good to get the friendship moment here. This, kind of a small part of this episode was Adira's feeling guilty about bringing the time bug aboard the ship. And then Paul tried to comfort them. You know, it was about over before it started because Raynar barged into engineering to talk to them about that. But what did you think?
I think Adira would feel guilty. I don't think they should. And I am glad that no one, I mean, Raynar just comes in, is like asking questions. He doesn't treat her any differently. Like no one is treating, I'm sorry, them. No one is treating Adira any differently based on the time bug. Basically, the time bug was going to get on with someone, and that it was Adira is just what happened.
So, yeah, the guilt is self-imposed in this case. Yes. It's not a result of anything else, anything anyone else has said to them. So yeah, I'm with you on that. Yeah, no Saru in this episode other than the Terran Empire version of him getting mentioned in there. So, which is fine. I like him, so I kind of hate to see him get sidelined as well. And he's even more important than Owu and Detmer. So I hope we don't get him minimized to like one or two episodes of the last five.
I don't like the idea that we either get Raynar or Saru, which is when I'm beginning to wonder if that's what the case is.
Yeah. Well, then the last, I think, little bit here is that, you know, they've got this vial, which was the last, was contained in that last piece of the device. And that's what they need to analyze to figure out the next clue. And Michael tells Booker that they look some things up and that Dr. Cho was one of these Terrans that was on the Enterprise and they did escape. And they made it to the Prime Universe, and she eventually became a branch admiral. And then all of a sudden, her records vanished. Several other people on the Enterprise made lives and careers in the Prime Universe. But it all gets to the lesson here. Booker points out that there was supposed to. It seems like there was a lesson to be learned with each one of the clues. One, the first one was the cultural context clue, mm-hmm. and then the second one was the dealing with the alien life forms, trying to understand them as opposed to just blasting them. And this one is recognizing that, you know, hope and that everyone is capable of shaping their own futures, which kind of goes along with what Booker was saying at the beginning of the episode, that no matter how bad and how dark things seem, you can always make a choice. So I thought that was a neat little narrative trick that they did there. They tied his personal log and the observation or the lesson that he learned from his predecessor into this lesson that Dr. Cho left behind. But what's your take?
No, that was good. Although I have thought about it, and I think that determining that somebody has good in them is Skywalkering. So I think that's what happened. I think Book is Skywalkering Maul.
Okay. Yeah, I was thinking of it in a broader context than that. No, but yeah, sure. It's a.
I have.
But,
no, I think it was a good. I mean, I think that's a good lesson. I think it's a good way of presenting it. I like the idea that each clue has a bit of a puzzle slash lesson attached to it. I do think that adds to the idea that not only did every scientist take the idea of having to protect the secret as very important and critical, they also added their own flair as to how they were going to put that extra piece of security in front of it.
Yeah. The only difference, though, is this time is that they didn't really have to learn the lesson in order to get the clue, where they did with the previous two clues.
That is true.
So, all right. I think that does it, unless you have anything else about this episode you want to cover.
I have one question for you, and I really don't know the answer.
Sure.
The pendant or the locket that Burnham puts the bit of her communicator with it so that it scans as Prime Universe. Like, I understood that. I couldn't tell, and I paused it and I still can't tell because I can't enhance the way I'd like to. Was that, I couldn't tell if that was supposed to be Georgiou and Burnham in the locket or it was just two random people. Could you tell?
I didn't see a clear enough image to tell you one way or the other.
Okay. All right.
All right, then. Yeah, well, I'm sure this won't be the last time I watch it.
Yeah, if anyone knows, hit us up on the Warp Trails room on the in the RetroZap Discord server.
Right, okay. Well, then that'll just conclude our discussion of Episode 5 of Season 5 of Discovery. And as Beth pointed out, we're now halfway through. And so it's all going to be over before we know it. All right, but we'll be back soon with our discussion of Episode 6. Before we go, Beth, you want to remind everybody where we can be found online?
I'm going to be really honest. The place you can find us is on the RetroZap Discord server. You can find us at the Warp Trails room and discuss Star Trek with us. We do have Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook presences, theoretically. On Twitter, it's at Warp Trails. Instagram and Facebook, we're at Warp Trails Pod. But like I said, come talk to us about the episode on the RetroZap Discord server, find the Warp Trails rooms, talk some Star Trek, and then talk about pretty much any fandom you would like. We've got a room for it.
Yeah, most of the interaction I get on Facebook is people offering to promote the show for me, which I'm not going to pay for. So, but I do try and post the show images on Facebook. I should do that on Instagram as well. This is easy enough, but neither here nor there. All right.
I don't want to do a mattress ad.
Not really. So the show is part of the RetroZap Podcast Network. You can head over to RetroZap.com for other great podcasts covering everything from collecting, video games, superheroes, movies, and a whole lot more. And with that, just want to say thanks for joining us, everyone. Live long and prosper. And we'll talk to you next time.
Don't knock a boiled cake till you tried it.